The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Would all those in favor of the motion please say aye?
Aye.
Contrary-minded, nay. The motion is carried. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now. Time is now 2:38. We will finish at 4:08. I recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, everyone has been wondering if the Liberals have a plan to create jobs, and it turns out they do, starting with former Liberal candidates. In other words, to hire Liberals. Clearly, Mr. Speaker, the party that dumped its former leader, John Savage, for trying to do away with such blatant patronage is now back in power here in Nova Scotia. That's not the party that presented itself to Nova Scotians in the recent election, but is the one that we have before us today. Mr. Speaker, I have with me and I will table the fair hiring policy of the Government of Nova Scotia, which states, among other things, that hiring activities in the government are based on the principles of merit and shall include such things as advertising and selection criteria and interviews. And so I want to ask the Premier a simple question. Did he follow his own fair hiring process when he hired a Liberal as the new protocol officer? And I'll table that for the House.
I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I want to thank the outgoing Chief Protocol Officer for the tremendous work that she has done on behalf of all Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, as to the question from the Leader of the Opposition, the answer would be yes. Mr. Speaker, as he would know, the new Chief Protocol Officer, who has had 30 years' experience both as a journalist in the private and public sector, Mr. Speaker, is not going into the civil service. She's been hired on a contract basis, Mr. Speaker, that is renewed on an annual basis, and any future government can do away or renew that contract if they so wish, Mr. Speaker. And I would also add, unlike previous governments, there is no buyout at the end of this contract, Mr. Speaker.
I recognize the Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the Premier for his answer, but unfortunately the answer is no, he didn't follow his own fair hiring process, because in the policy itself it lists positions that are allowed to be exempt from the fair hiring policy from the civil service, and it lists such positions as assistant deputy ministers, CEOs, executive assistants to cabinet ministers, and so on, but it specifically does not list the protocol officer, meaning that it's required that the protocol officer position go through the fair hiring policies of the government. So unfortunately, the Premier didn't follow his own policies, and I'll table that for the benefit of the Premier and the House. Mr. Speaker, the sad fact is that Nova Scotians, who are the taxpayers going to pay the bill for this job, did not have a fair chance to compete for it. I know that in the election, the Liberal campaign slogan was Liberals first, but now that the election is over, it's pretty clear that the real slogan is Liberals first, everyone else second.
There you go.
Mr. Speaker, It's pretty clear. Did I mess that up? Did I mess that one up? Mr. Speaker, it's pretty clear. The Premier exempted himself from his own government's fair hiring policy to pay off a friend, something that is forbidden under the rules. So my question to the Premier is, why does he tell the public service, do as they say, but not as I do?
I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very proud of the fact, given the privilege to be the Premier of this province, one of the first things that I did was given the opportunity to go from department to department, recognizing the great public servants that we have in this province who do tremendous work on behalf of all of us. Again, Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the leader of the Conservative Party that we did not appoint someone into the public service. What we've done, Mr. Speaker, is we've hired a qualified Nova Scotian to fill the job as Chief Protocol Officer in the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, I also want to remind all members of this House, it was on a contract basis, which is renewed annually, Mr. Speaker, and there is no payout at the end of this contract, Mr. Speaker.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
And Mr. Speaker, I would like to remind the Premier that now that he's in office, he will be judged on his actions and not just on his words. He can visit as many public servants as he wants, but when he breaks his own rules, that is what he will ultimately be judged by, Mr. Speaker. But I do agree that the Protocol Office serves an important function. In fact, it is responsible for something as important as the Order of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Past winners of the Order of Nova Scotia include such eminent Nova Scotians as Anne Murray, Muriel Duckworth, John Savage himself, and I can just imagine what he's thinking today, Mr. Speaker, and Rocky Jones. So I will ask the Premier, why does he believe it is okay to politicize such an important office?
Recognize the Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member, my mother was also a recipient of the Order of Nova Scotia. But I want to remind all members of this House that as we announced yesterday that we would be hiring a 30-year worker in this province who had a career in journalism, worked in the private sector, worked in as well in the public sector, Mr. Speaker. Yes, Mr. Speaker, she is a Liberal. That doesn't disqualify her from that job, Mr. Speaker. And I want to remind all members of this House that she's on a contract basis. It will be renewed annually. If any future government wants to end that contract, they can do so.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, yesterday we learned the Premier had awarded the job of Chief Protocol Officer to a former Liberal Party staff member and failed Liberal Party candidate in the recent election. Mr. Speaker, the last time the Liberal Party was in government, back in the 90s, they did the very same thing. Appointed a Liberal Party insider as Chief of Protocol and passed over a 35-year veteran of the Navy who had handled two royal visits and numerous tours by prime ministers and governor generals. And Mr. Speaker, I'd like to table some articles from the Cape Breton Post entitled Province Settles Patronage Dispute. This decision cost the province $67,000 a year following a complaint to the Human Rights Commission due to discrimination based on political affiliation. So my question to the Premier is this. Did the Premier decide not to hold an open competition for this $85,000 a year position in order to avoid any embarrassing legal action if his favored candidate wasn't successful in a fair and open competition?
I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I, as I said earlier to a previous question, Mr. Speaker, yesterday we hired a former journalist in this province, someone who's worked in the private sector and in the public sector for over 30 years to become our new Chief Protocol Officer in this province. We did so, Mr. Speaker, by contract basis. The contract will be renewed annually. If any future government wants to cancel that contract, that they can do so. And, Mr. Speaker, I want to add that there is no big buyout at the end of the day.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm going to table from January of this year a job description for a junior protocol officer in the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, that job description outlines duties and qualifications for that job, which include oral and written French skills, a proven track record of budget forecasting and management, experience monitoring revenues and expenditures, and a minimum of 4 years of progressive event management and protocol experience. Mr. Speaker, therefore, my question to the Premier is this. Since there was no open and fair process, can the Premier tell us what specific assets and skills his preferred candidate and former communication director has to qualify for this $85,000 a year position?
Recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I said in many answers already in this House, yesterday we hired a new Chief Protocol Officer, Mr. Speaker, 30 years' experience as a journalist, working both in the private sector, yes, communicating, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the citizens of this province. The contract that we hired on is renewed annually, Mr. Speaker, and any future government, if they do so wish, can undo that, Mr. Speaker. Unlike previous governments, Mr. Speaker, there is no big buyout at the end of this day.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it sounds like some of the pathetic excuses we've heard over the years for appointments to the Senate. Mr. Speaker, Canadians have watched in disbelief as the details of appointments to the Senate, in fact, are exposed on a daily basis, and they're fed up with public resources being used for partisan gain. One thing, Mr. Speaker, we all agree on is that people should receive positions of public responsibility based on merit, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the Premier, if your former communications director was indeed the best person for the job, why wouldn't you have required that she have earned that position fair and square?
I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier, yesterday we hired a person who has spent 30 years working in this province, Mr. Speaker, as a journalist, as well as both in the private and public sector, communicating on behalf of their clients, Mr. Speaker. And we've also hired on a contract basis that will renewed annually. And I want to add, at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, there is no buyout. Unlike, Mr. Speaker, the previous government, when they let go of their contract employees, all of a sudden bumped up that severance pay, with Nova Scotians are having to pay for today, Mr. Speaker.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when the Premier hired his friend to this important job, he says that he followed the government's own fair hiring policies. So let's see. The fair hiring policy states that members of the public must be provided with reasonable access and notification of career opportunities within the government of Nova Scotia. So I have a simple question. Was this position advertised? And if so, will the Premier provide a copy of that advertisement to the House before the end of question period today?
I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said earlier to the Leader of the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker, we hired a new Chief Protocol Officer yesterday, Mr. Speaker, done in the past in this province. Mr. Speaker, it is under the purview of the Executive Council of Government to do so. It is not. We did not hire somebody into the public service. It's been based on a contract basis that will be renewed annually. And, Mr. Speaker, any future government, if they so wish, can end that contract. I will also add, Mr. Speaker, there is no big buyout at the end of the day.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess we'll take that as a no. The Premier said a moment ago that he followed his own hiring policies when asked simply to provide the advertisement that those policies require. He didn't answer. We'll have to take that non-answer as a no. And I will say, Mr. Speaker, it's a pretty sad day in the province of Nova Scotia when there's such blatant patronage going on, and the low standard that the Premier sets is only that he didn't provide a balloon payment at the end, because in this case, Mr. Speaker, the payment is all up front. But Mr. Speaker, the Premier said in the media yesterday that several candidates were considered. I didn't know there were that many needy Liberals out there, Mr. Speaker. But I'll ask the Premier another simple yes or no question. Will the Premier tell the House how many candidates applied?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said earlier in this House, Mr. Speaker, yesterday we hired a person with 30 years' experience, Mr. Speaker, as a journalist working in both the private and public sector, Mr. Speaker, communicating on behalf of her clients. And, Mr. Speaker, we hired her on a contract basis that she's not a member of the civil service. That contract is renewed annually, and any future government, if they so wish, can end that contract.
The Honourable Leader of the Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess the answer to was it advertised is no, and the answer to how many candidates were there is I'm not going to tell you. So, Mr. Speaker, let me go on. The fair hiring policy of the government, which the Premier says he followed, requires, and I quote, screening and selection criteria, interviews, rating scales, answer keys, tests and related assessments, and reference checks that are impartial and relevant to the position. Mr. Speaker, the only reference check that we know was done in this case was the Premier himself, who provided it by a YouTube video in September 2013, and I'll quote from that video, which is in the public domain. Glennie would make a great addition to a Liberal government. We have worked together for a number of years. Nothing would make me happier than to have her working as part of a Liberal government. That's the only reference that was done. Mr. Speaker, the Premier has said publicly that there were other candidates. He won't tell us today how many, if any, there were. So let me ask him another simple question. How many candidates were interviewed and by whom?
I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier, Mr. Speaker, yesterday we hired a new Chief Protocol Officer in this province, one who has 30 years' experience both as a journalist and in both the private and public sector communicating on behalf of her clients. Mr. Speaker, we did so on a contract basis. She is not a member of the public service, and any future government, if they so wish, can undo that contract.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Another question. Mr. Speaker, the taxpayers of Nova Scotia who are going to pay the bill for this blatant patronage appointment do not care if it's a contract or not. It is their money, and he is using it to pay off a Liberal friend, something he said he was against in opposition. That is the issue here today. Mr. Speaker, the Premier says he followed the government's fair hiring policy, and yet he can't produce an ad that policy requires. He won't tell us how many candidates, if any, were attracted to the position, even though that is required, or even if they were interviewed. We can only assume the answer to all of those is no, no, no. Mr. Speaker, the fair hiring policy also states that the Public Service Commission itself is responsible for monitoring the effectiveness and consistent application of this policy. I'll ask the Premier another simple question. Was the Public Service Commission consulted on this hire? And if not, will the Premier allow them to review the appointment and report back publicly to this House?
I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday we hired a new Chief Protocol Officer in this province, Mr. Speaker, one who has had 30 years' experience both in the public and private sector, Mr. Speaker. working on behalf of her clients. She spent a number of years as a journalist, Mr. Speaker. She's on an annual contract basis. Mr. Speaker, unlike other conservative and new democratic governments who buried their patronage appointments inside of the public service, Mr. Speaker, we were very upfront.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, rubbing Nova Scotia taxpayer noses in a blatant patronage appointment is not a step forward. It is a step backwards. Nothing to brag about. Mr. Speaker, the Public Service Commission, under the government's own policy, the Premier's own policy, is responsible for, and I quote, modeling public service values of respect.
Order, please.
The official leader of the opposition has the floor.
The Public Service Commission is responsible for modeling public service values of respect, integrity, diversity, accountability, and the public good. Now, my question to the Premier, why doesn't he show the same public service values now that he's the head of the public service?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has continued to support the public service. Mr. Speaker, I've been very proud of the way that they've responded to the new government. I've been very encouraged by the support that they've received by them. Speaker, I've been thrilled by their openness and willingness to help government return this province back to fiscal sanity. I've been thrilled and inspired by the way they want to be part of finding the solutions to ensure that Nova Scotians have the access to the services that that they require, Mr. Speaker, and I am going to continue to work with the public service to make sure that Nova Scotians get the delivery of government services that they require.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I highly doubt that making such a blatant patronage appointment will motivate the public service to follow their own fair hiring policies as much as I know they wish to do that. Mr. Speaker, the new protocol officer picked by the Premier himself without any valid competition in violent contravention of their own policies was hired on a contract. The Premier says there's no penalty for ending that contract. I'd like to give him an opportunity to do the right thing. Will the Premier rescind this blatant contract today and allow Ms. Langille to compete properly for it under the fair hiring policies or not?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to again thank the outgoing Chief Protocol Officer for the tremendous work that she's done on behalf of the citizens of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, yesterday we hired a person who has 30 years' experience both in the private and public sector, Mr. Speaker, and I want to wish the new Chief Protocol Officer all the best as she moves forward into her new job.
I recognize the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, for several months now, Nova Scotians have been hearing this Premier say over and over again that they can trust him, and that he's going to lead an open and transparent government that will create change in Nova Scotia. It was even mentioned in the throne speech, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. Will he please explain how he is earning the trust of Nova Scotians with the swift patronage appointment of a former Liberal staffer turned failed candidate to an office without an open competition and not based on the principles of merit?
Recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I've been very encouraged by the support that we received from the public service as a new government, the way they've been willing to work with us to ensure that we can deliver the services to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. And yesterday, we hired a new Chief Protocol Officer, Mr. Speaker, who will provide services to the province of Nova Scotia, and I want to wish her well in her new job.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier doesn't get it. He doesn't get this isn't about Ms. Langille. It's about his decision to create a contract for a job that has been filled for quite some time now through a fair and open competition based on merit. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier said that there were other candidates considered for this non-advertised, non-posted, non-competed for position. So I want to ask the Minister, or the Premier, in the interest of transparency, would he please tell Nova Scotians what other failed candidates or former staffers he considered for that or any other job he's not going to post in the public sector?
I recognize the Premier.
Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we were notified by the Chief Protocol Officer that she would be retiring after committed to 30 years of public service to the people of Nova Scotia, and I want to commend her for the tremendous job that she's done on behalf of all of us, Mr. Speaker. We then, Mr. Speaker, yesterday hired a new Chief Protocol Officer who has 30 years of experience, both the public and private sector, Mr. Speaker, on a contract that is well within keeping, Mr. Speaker, of that position. There is no buyout at the end of this contract, Mr. Speaker. Unlike, Mr. Speaker, the former government who hid behind cabinet secrecy to make sure they bumped up the severance packages of those leaving on contract for them.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier can attempt to deflect from having to answer tough questions all he likes. But Mr. Speaker, there is a question that he has failed to respond to here, and that is, why did he decide not to have a fair and open competition based on merit for a job that has been advertised and put through a competitive process for quite some considerable period of time now, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier, Mr. Speaker, we were notified by the former Chief Protocol Officer she'd be retiring, Mr. Speaker. We yesterday hired a new Chief Protocol Officer. There's a succession plan going forward, Mr. Speaker. It's on a contract basis, and any future government, if they so wish, can undo that contract.
Recognize the Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In opposition, the Liberal government criticized the past government for their corporate bailouts. In a Chronicle Herald article this morning, the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism was quoted saying, "The whole idea here is if we're making an investment, it is to help them grow. Help them put people to work and not put that at risk." And I'd like to document that, please. Table it, sorry. It has been 2 months since the Liberals formed government, and we have their first bailout. $1 million going to a company. To create jobs? No. To invest infrastructure? No. The company is paying off private debt with government funds. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism is paying off a corporation's private debt a corporate bailout?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the member for the question. Speaker, the fact is that this was a decision that was brought forward to our government by Nova Scotia Business Incorporated with the support of their board. And ironically, later today we'll be debating a bill by the official opposition asking that more funding be given to Nova Scotia Business Incorporated to do economic development. So I'm a bit confused. Does the official opposition support the decisions, the independent arm's length decisions of Nova Scotia Business Incorporated, or don't they?
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
In an article in All Nova Scotia, the CEO was quoted as saying that the company had no bank account to speak of, and the company was running on fumes, and I'll table that document as well. The definition of bailout, in case you're not aware, is an act of giving financial assistance to a failing business. The government gave the funds. The company was running on fumes. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, has the definition of bailout changed, or was this a bailout?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Speaker, unfortunately, what the member failed to read in that article and other articles is the fact that this business has been turning itself around. In fact, that it is now moving in the right direction. And I should add as well, Mr. Speaker, what the member fails to recognize is that there is, well, two other private investment partners that are putting additional investments in this company. So maybe she wants to put her question to those private investors as well, whether she thinks that they're putting money into a bailout or into what they see as an appropriate investment.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Nova Scotia is $14 billion in debt. We have lost over 11,000 full-time jobs in the last 4 years, and I'll table that document. We have the highest taxes in the country, and we have a stagnant economic growth. Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask the question, why should Nova Scotians be on the hook to pay this debt instead of the company?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Speaker, there's a significant investment that's been made in this particular company, not only by the province, but by as well private funding partners who have put money into this. As I indicated, the company has turned itself around, and we're certainly hopeful that the company is going to be successful moving into the future. This investment came from the recommendation of the Nova Scotia Business and Corporation with the support of their board, and I would again ask, does the official opposition support Nova Scotia Business Incorporated, or are they going to be critical of a decision made by an arm's length body at making an investment in this particular company?
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, in 2011, the NDP made a decision to purchase a mobile paving plant based on a business case, and we were happy to share the business case with all Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, I'll table that. Mr. Speaker, background information and statistics were available to the public on the government website. For some reason, this evidence can no longer be found online. Mr. Speaker, can the minister please tell Nova Scotians when he received a business plan to eliminate the chip seal crew and the asphalt plant?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the member would know, and the House would know, when the paving plant was brought to the House back in 2011, we opposed that endeavour by the former government. Number one, we don't agree that the government should be in private sector business. We shouldn't be competing with the private sector. This is a great example of that, where it's a robust industry, the road builders and the paving industry here in Nova Scotia. That's no secret, Mr. Speaker. The financials, and I'm sure that the member wants to debate the numbers. I welcome that debate. I'm very familiar with the numbers that were associated with the paving plant. None of the financials, none of the numbers, none of the information supports keeping the paving plant online. Number three, there's a minimal impact, if any at all, on employees. I met with the leaders for CUPE to ensure them that all jobs that were connected to the paving plant will revert back to the seniority list within TIR. Anyone that was affected, we will look at individually to make sure the minimum impact is felt with employees. We don't want anyone to lose their jobs, Mr. Speaker. And finally, I've talked to many Nova Scotians in my own riding, on my own island, and across this province. We made the right decision. They know we made the right decision. We shouldn't be in the paving business, and that's pretty obvious.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne on his first supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And first of all, Mr. Speaker, this is no backbencher asking a question to the Minister of Transportation. First of all, CUPE was outside here the first day in a protest, and in the first day, a week of your government, there was a protest at your constituency office. Mr. Speaker, the decision to purchase a paving plant was made based on a business case. It meant that Nova Scotia could pay less for paving and could therefore pave more throughout the province. That decision had its biggest impact on rural roads in isolated regions of our province. It meant that roads that were traditionally unattractive to private paving firms could be done by a provincial crew. Simply put, Mr. Speaker, it meant no one in rural Nova Scotia would be left behind. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, I'll try my question in a different way. Again, what actual evidence does the Minister have to suggest that getting rid of the public paving plant will benefit Nova Scotians? And since the Minister hasn't made any evidence available online, could he please table this information?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, I think it's very unfair that the information that's being spread by the NDP with respect to the paving plant is inaccurate. There's two points that they're making. Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to address them now. First of all, prices in the paving industry dropped for the last number of years because we've had increased competition. If you'd like the answer, let me finish it. So we've had increased competition from New Brunswick, Mr. Speaker. So in the last 3 years, between 2011 and 2014 budgeted, we've spent $167 million more just on roads, which means we have an Atlantic Procurement Agreement, which means those companies can come here and bid on our jobs, Mr. Speaker. There's increased competition. That forces the prices down. That's what happens. Secondly, with respect to rural roads, we do a pretty poor job with tendering. We've got to tighten up the tendering process. We've got to get them out earlier. And when we're putting companies in remote areas and we're asking them to do jobs, we've got to package those tenders so we can make sure that the logistics work to get Nova Scotians working. And by the way, Mr. Speaker, the people in the construction industry and the people in the paving industry, they hire Nova Scotians too, and it's an important industry for all of us.
The Honourable Member for Queen's Shelburne on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, you can see there, Mr. Speaker, that it sounds to me like the Minister doesn't have a business case. Mr. Speaker, the NDP recognized the purchase of asphalt plant ensuring paving could take place in isolated communities that weren't attracted to private contractors. This will prove to be true with roads in remote communities in Victoria and Guysborough counties, just for example, as those communities received paving that was long overdue. So, Mr. Speaker, why would the Minister do away with a chip seal crew in asphalt plant when he knows paving in rural communities will suffer as a result? And, Mr. Speaker, this is no backbencher asking the Minister a question. I expect results. Thank you very much.
I recognize
the Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. It's coming from a member who just asked that question in his previous remarks, so I just answered it, and he just read the question as opposed to reacting to what I just said. So if he wants to talk about the business case, we just talked about the business case. This does not drive prices down, Mr. Speaker. It doesn't drive prices down. This is not how this works. The paving plant did not compete with the private sector. The NDP will make the claim that it was a competitor with the private sector, which is entirely inaccurate because it didn't bid on projects. The private sector bid on their own, and the private sector did that as a competition. The government selected certain spots and sent the paving plant there. That's not competition, Mr. Speaker. That doesn't affect the prices in the industry at all. The reality is, and Nova Scotians know this, Mr. Speaker, we made the right decision. We're standing by that decision, and the people of Nova Scotia can be proud that the Liberal government here, early days in office, made a good call on their behalf, and we're sticking by that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The newly formed government has been quick to point out the flip-flops by the past government. Now that they have a chance to correct all the mistakes of the previous government, which I will admit is no small task, the government is caught. The government is caught in its own flip-flops. It is only 56 days into this government's mandate. One issue that the government hammered when in opposition was the cabinet-controlled slush fund. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism is, and it's fairly simple, will these funds be removed from the control of the cabinet?
Recognize the Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to say that we've got common ground between myself and the Honourable Member when it comes to talking about the challenges of the previous administration. We're certainly on the same page on that. Speaker, the fact is that we introduced legislation which is going to make any business deals done by the province of Nova Scotia accessible to all Nova Scotians and be posted online. As well, we've indicated that there is going to be a third-party review of all economic development tools in this province. More importantly, not just to see what tools we're using, what changes would have to be made, but as well, I'm pleased to announce they will also be looking at who exactly should be using the new economic development tools in this province.
Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
In the Liberal platform, they said, Nova Scotia needs jobs, not corporate welfare. Yeah. In a chronicle...
Order, please. Order, please.
Order, please. The member for Pictou West has the floor.
In a Chronicle Herald article, the Premier, when in opposition, said, it's a slush fund for cabinet ministers that sit around the cabinet table to decide who's going to get what. And I will table that. From comments to media, lately, the government's cabinet plans to continue making decisions on where taxpayers' money goes rather than an arm's length entity. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Economic Development and Tourism, what changed in the last 56 days from where the current government slammed the past government for cabinet-controlled slush funds to supporting the practice once becoming government?
I recognize the Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, as I indicated earlier, we've introduced legislation which will make all deals done by the province of Nova Scotia accessible and will be made public and will be there for Nova Scotians to see for themselves how their money has been invested. As I indicated as well, Mr. Speaker, we are undertaking a third-party review which will look at all the economic development tools that we have as a province. But in doing so, I'm pleased to inform the member today that the Nova Scotia Jobs Fund, as it is currently structured, will no longer exist.
Yeah. The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier agreed in opposition that the multi-million dollar fund, which hands out money to businesses to spur job creation, lacks oversight and should be managed by an arm's length agency rather than politicians. He said in a CBC article on May 17, 2011, it's done in the secrecy of a cabinet room, and it raises serious questions when Nova Scotians are not given an opportunity to review business plans. He went on to say, this is nothing more than a slush fund for cabinet ministers, and I will table that. My question to you, Minister, which version of the Premier will answer this question? The one who stood up for taxpayers in opposition, or the one who wants his cabinet to have control of that money?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Speaker, it's a bit amusing to hear the term flip-flop because on one end we have the Leader of Official Opposition saying that all such deals should be done through NSBI, and yet earlier the member asked a question criticizing a decision by NSBI supported by its board to invest in the company. So with all due respect, Mr. Speaker, this is only day two of question period and we're seeing flip-flops from the official opposition pretty quickly. Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, a review is underway. As I mentioned, we are waiting for the Ivany Commission report to come out hopefully in early 2014, which will give us as well a better sense of the challenges and some of the opportunities that we have moving forward in dealing with the economy of Nova Scotia. But as I indicated earlier, to give more assurances to the member, is that the Jobs Fund as it currently exists will be no longer.
Recognize the Honourable Member for Queens-Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, it's crucial as a province we protect our natural resources. We must ensure that they are used for the benefit of Nova Scotians. My question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture. Does he support the granting of licenses for the DFO to foreign companies to catch and process Canadian quotas off the coast of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries and Aquaculture.
No.
The Honourable Member for Queens-Shelburne on his first supplementary.
I certainly like the response, and I'm going to complete my questions. I really congratulate the Minister for that direct response. Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians were saddened by the news that Premium Seafoods of Aerosat was destroyed by fire. I was pleased to read just a couple of weeks ago that the plant is being rebuilt and the people will be back to work soon. At the same time, I know that fishermen across this province were upset to learn that DFO had granted a license to the Icelandic fishing trawler to catch and process 1,550 tons of redfish quota. My question for the Minister, has he had any discussions with DFO about the decision? And if so, what message did the Minister give to his federal counterpart?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries and Aquaculture.
That's a question I'll ask the former Minister. You were in the Minister's position when that transpired, and I would like to know what you did. The decision was made before I became Minister.
The Honourable Member from Queens Shelburne on his final supplementary.
Well, there was a thing called election. It was an in-between that was there. But the decision, Mr. Speaker, I quickly want to point out there's a memorandum of understanding with the provinces, and I'm glad to hear the Minister's response. So I want to know if he understands that there's a memorandum of understanding with the provinces in the federal government dealing with such decisions when it has effect on Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, the past election, the Nova Scotians ran on the campaign slogan, Nova Scotia First. My question for the Minister, with fishing vessels tied up around this province for much of the year, will he put Nova Scotia first by letting Ottawa know under no circumstances should foreign trawlers be allowed to fish off our shores? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries and Aquaculture.
I thank the former Minister of Fisheries. He should have thought of this when he was a minister of the day. And what I understand from the briefing I received on the staff in that situation, the license was let by DFO to harvest some product that was supported by the present minister, or the past minister.
I recognize the Honourable Member for Timberley Prospect.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Environment. Considering that HRM staff has delayed the vote on the future of the Otter Lake landfill report, will the Minister state in this House that no changes will occur with respect to the front-end processing and waste stabilization facility?
I recognize the Honourable Minister of the Environment.
For this particular issue, I just want to make it clear for the record that there's been no application and nothing before the Department of Environment for any changes or modifications to the approval for that facility. And it is the position of the Department and the government that we will not entertain modifications to the existing approval.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Justice. We all sympathize with the families of Raymond Tavel, who was killed 18 months ago, and also with the family of Noel Denny, who was on unescorted leave from the East Coast Forensic Hospital and is now facing a charge of murder. Mr. Speaker, many people believe that GPS ankle bracelets would monitor the movement of patients on leave or offenders on bail and give the authorities the tools they need to locate a person quickly. That could have made a difference for Mr. Tavel, and our actions in this legislature can make a difference in the life of a future Nova Scotian. My question to the minister, will the minister protect Nova Scotians from potentially dangerous people in our communities and use ankle bracelets?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We too very much sympathize with the Tavel family as well. It's very important to remember in this House that people receiving care in the forensic center are patients and not offenders. I know my colleague in health and wellness has been studying this issue, and we at Justice are very happy to look at all these reports and make recommendations with our colleagues. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is not just about patients, but it's also about offenders and the potential for a patient to become an offender, as we saw with the Tavel case. Now, this past October, Paul Callan was released on bail, and he now lives in Hammond's Plains. He is charged with the murder of his girlfriend and, sadly, with the burning of her remains. No police officer can monitor that individual for 24 hours a day. My question to the minister, will she explain to the families of her neighboring constituency why this accused offender is unmonitored, only monitored based on his honor and his personal commitment to meet the terms of his house arrest?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I understand that Nova Scotians are very concerned. So too are we at Justice. But as I already said, people who are deemed to be not criminally responsible are not offenders and are patients. And I will ask Minister of Health and Wellness to address this issue. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable Member for the question. This is an issue that the Department of Health has moved to a study position. The Wickwire home report has in fact spent quite a bit of time addressing GPS tracking as one of the possible options that indeed can be used. I'm pleased to say that at the East Coast Forensic Center, the 18 recommendations that were made after the Tavel tragedy have been implemented. Certainly around the assessment of the patient, around education of the staff, more rigor in determining the supervised and the unsupervised passes. But yet we know there will be occasions when a patient may not return. So for that reason, we are taking a look at the best information coming out of the United Kingdom, and in collaboration with Justice, we will have a recommendation coming forward.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I know the government is concerned about the self-esteem of the patients. And what could happen to them and their minds if they're wearing one of these bracelets. But I do know that in the UK, there's even recognition that it actually leads to more freedom for patients because there's a higher level of trust because the bracelet ensures that they are monitored 24 hours a day. Now, last week, we have seen another patient who was deemed not criminally responsible for a crime disappear from the hospital, from the East Coast Forensic Hospital. And this is the same start of events that led to Mr. Tavel's death. This government has a chance to improve safety. My question to the Minister of Justice or the Minister of Health, how many Nova Scotians will be put in harm's way before we get moving with more use of these ankle bracelets?
I recognize the Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And right now, we are taking a look at what are the ethical, the legal, the human rights, whether or not our criminal code structure can also be applied in the same way as these bracelets are used in the UK with incarcerated prisoners and prisoner slash patients in their case. So for that reason, we have to make sure that we do the best research on this. But I can assure the honourable member that this Minister of Health will not be shy about being the first province in Canada with his GPS monitoring if it's indeed the right direction to go.
Recognize the honourable member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, our forests built this province. For hundreds of years, they've provided good jobs that keep our young people here at home instead of going down the road. Our forests are also places of great beauty and diversity. Striking the balance between conservation and economic prosperity is a fine line, and not everyone is going to agree upon how this balance can be achieved. So, Mr. Speaker, how does this minister expect to maintain Nova Scotia's new reputation as a leader in Crown land management when he has members of his own caucus, the member from Guysborough Eastern Shore Tracadie, for example, on record calling Nova Scotia's land protection targets an absolutely insane and a complete farce?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for her question. When the vote came to this House of Assembly on the protected land targets, it was a unanimous vote. It was a 12% target that all parties in this House supported, and those targets remain committed to by this government.
The honourable member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'm glad to hear that the minister now supports what our former government did. And actually, we exceeded those that are tall, and we got 13% instead of 12%. So, Mr. Speaker, the NDP stood shoulder to shoulder with forestry workers and conservationists when the former Bowater lands came under provincial jurisdiction. We stood up and protected the land that we all call home. So, Mr. Speaker, given that the minister has been an outspoken proponent of reducing our protected lands, can he explain how he plans to strike that fine line now that he's responsible for both the economic well-being of those who work the forest and also those who simply want to enjoy it?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to clarify for the House of Assembly, I have never been a proponent of reducing protected land targets. In fact, I voted for those protected land targets in this House of Assembly along with every other single member. Our government remains committed to those targets. What the member is referring to is a petition that I signed that was brought to my attention from constituents signed by over 2,200 people that did not feel that their views were included in the consultation process that the previous government had laid out for those protected lands. That is a community that lives in a border area with those protected lands. And differently from the previous government, we'll make sure that those views are considered when we move forward on these discussions.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for his answer. We do have a copy of that letter, in fact, and we can table that. But it does sound like a bit of a flip-flop to me. So, Mr. Speaker, being responsible for the largest amount of Crown land in Nova Scotia's history will not be easy. It's going to be a hard job. And today it's going to be even harder because this minister is now tasked with reducing his natural resources budget by 1%. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, where can foresters and conservationists expect the cuts to come from?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Speaker. We have a budget reduction target that we're going to achieve within our department. We are doing that so we can reinvest in the cuts that the previous government made to our education system and our health care system. I am committed. And, Mr. Speaker, I'm committed to ensuring that those budget targets, which is 1%, that is a small amount of our budget, will not impact our land management strategy or our forestry products in the province of Nova Scotia.
Recognize the honourable member for Sydney, Whitney Pier.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Community Services. During the elections, the Liberals promised to cut 1% from almost every single government department. In the Department of Community Services, this cut equals roughly $10 million. And I will table that, Mr. Speaker, the election. Can the Minister please explain where she plans to make these cuts?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe I answered the question yesterday. It will come through the... It will come through the administrative sections of the department, and I've also committed that not one penny will affect the clients or the service providers that provide the superior services to the most vulnerable of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Sydney, Whitney Pier, on his first supplementary.
Thank you. It was in within the department. I'm looking for numbers, Mr. Speaker. According to the Minister, she plans to find millions of dollars in savings by identifying inefficiencies within the department. The last time the Liberals were in power, they found many jobs to be inefficient. As a result, Nova Scotians found empty desks, disconnected phone lines when they tried connecting with people they once counted on for support. So my second supplement is, I'm curious, does the current Liberal Minister definition of inefficiency also include jobs?
The Honourable Minister for Community Services.
A complete review will be undergoing, Mr. Speaker, in the administrative inefficiencies of the department, and we will not be cutting anything from the programs that directly affect service providers or the clients of the department.
The Honourable Member for Sydney, Whitney Pier, on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister would like Nova Scotians to believe she'll be able to magically cut and find millions of dollars in savings by cutting down on photocopying. But the reality is, her plan just doesn't add up. My question to the Minister is, when do the layoffs start?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, we will be looking at administrative inefficiencies that will not affect the frontline programs or services that go to vulnerable Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, in 2006, the current Minister of Health introduced an amendment to the Video Lottery Terminal Moratorium Act that brings VLTs administered by First Nations bands into the moratorium. I will table that bill now. My question to the minister responsible, does the minister stand behind his colleague's opposition bill, or has his party's views changed now that they are in government?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness and Seniors.
No, it's yeah. That's a...
Oh. Beg your pardon, the Honourable Minister of Communications, Nova Scotia and Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know there's always been a confusion which part it is, but part one of the Gaming Control Act is VLTs. There you go. So I thank the Honourable Member for the question. The issue of Aboriginal gaming is far more complicated than some of the other parts, as the member will be aware. It is governed by the 2011 Aboriginal Gaming Agreement with the province, and obviously that is an agreement between governments, between the province and between the Aboriginal community, and we respect that agreement.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in 2004, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts At the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, the current Minister of Health said he believed VLTs on First Nations were not used only by First Nations people, and that the machines represented an opportunity for problem gamblers to gamble, a kind of a loophole. I will table the transcript of that committee meeting now. My question to the minister, does the minister responsible agree with his party's past position, or has it changed now that they are in government?
The Honourable Minister of Energy and Communications, Nova Scotia.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and as the member pointed out, that was before the committee in 2004, and the province of Nova Scotia in 2011 reached and entered into a legally binding arrangement with the Aboriginal communities of this province. Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure whether the Honourable Member is suggesting that this government should walk away from a legally binding contract with our First Nations. I'd be shocked if that's what he's suggesting.
The Honourable Member for King's North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to get to what I am suggesting. A gaming centre with 45 VLTs will soon be opened in a residential area of Hammond's Plains. There are plans to add 100 more machines. The local residents oppose the centre. My question to the Minister, will the government resurrect its 2006 bill, or will it sit back and let that gaming centre go ahead, despite what the Minister of Health said in 2004 and 2006?
The Honourable Minister of Energy and Communications, Nova Scotia.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, first I would suggest the Honourable Member talk to his federal cousin, since the only reason that's being allowed to go ahead is because of a federal decision on creating ban lands in that area. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member will be well aware that there are allocations of VLTs under the 2011 gaming agreement. That gaming agreement, just like any other agreement between the government of Nova Scotia and an Aboriginal community, is an agreement in good faith. It is a contract between those parties, and can, Mr. Speaker, a bill before this legislature that would change that agreement between the First Nations communities of this country, the First Peoples of this country, and the province of Nova Scotia would put this province in court for years to come.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Now, I know the Minister has only been in his role for a couple of months, Mr. Speaker, but I know from his many years in this House that he also held the role of health critic. And he also understands, Mr. Speaker, the needs of those requiring renal dialysis in this province. And I wonder if the Minister is committed to reviewing some of the decisions made by past governments that do not address the needs of all Nova Scotians, especially those in rural Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I really thank the member opposite, the health critic, for that question. It's a very, very significant question. There are over 3,000 Nova Scotians who suffer from some form of kidney disease, over 500 who receive dialysis. There are three programs across Nova Scotia, one in Sydney, one in Yarmouth, and of course the largest one here at the QE2. QE2, therefore, is the guiding health authority or department that decides on what satellite communities will be established. Presently, Kentville is the community that will receive the next satellite dialysis opportunity in the province. That should be in place within about 18 months, and it's going to do two things, and that is take pressure off the program here at the QE2, as well as allow more people to stay in the valley as opposed to commuting to Halifax.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that response. And I know he's very familiar, and I certainly know how familiar he is with the decisions that have been made for Kentville. Now, I wouldn't suggest for a moment, Mr. Speaker, that Kentville does not deserve to have dialysis in that area. They do, as do Berwick, where they are currently located, and many people travel to from my area as well. There was a suggestion, however, that we are all familiar with the Hants Community Hospital. I know that the Minister is in the Windsor area, who have volunteers and a board and a foundation who have raised tens of thousands of dollars, Mr. Speaker, to support the purchase of renal dialysis units there. They also have staff who I've spoke to are willing to come back home to work. Would the minister consider this, giving all of the options that have been put out there, the support that does exist and still exist, to review that decision for Kemphill, maybe share some of that wealth, if you will, throughout the valley to cover all areas and to relieve some of the physical and mental stress as well as the financial burdens that go along with those traveling for dialysis treatment?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this is one of the health areas that we know is going to have greater demands in the future, just looking at the aging population. And it goes along with, of course, with chronic disease and sometimes multiple diseases that that our citizens will have. So at the present time, there isn't a plan for Windsor, but looking at the demand that we will have and trying to take some pressure off the 42 beds, three shifts that go through the QE2, I am sure that there can be a review and to get best guidance from the QE2 as to the need and the help that may be able to be provided from other sites across the province.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and again I thank the Honourable Minister for that answer. And a review is one word, and I guess that's where we can start, but I really hope that he takes seriously what is being offered by those folks in the Windsor West Hants area. What they have to offer is something that's not been offered anywhere else, Minister, and I know that you know that as well. So what an opportunity to seek that help and to add it to straining budgets. We know that they all exist. We know things cost money. But I hope seriously that the Minister will do more than take it under review, that we'll look at a serious plan in the months ahead to have some discussions with those people out there as well that deserve to be treated fairly and to take those stresses off those traveling that need that renal dialysis. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, the member for the question. And I think all of us in this House know that patients who suffer kidney disease go through a very, very challenging disease, having to go to a center three times a week if they're not able to be a candidate for home dialysis. One of the facts that we should all know in this House about the renal program in our province is that we're actually a national leader in the number of citizens who actually receive kidney transplant. And that is a very, very good thing that we're able to speak about on a per capita basis, having the highest number of kidney transplants, which becomes a final health delivery for many people. That being said, we know the kind of pressure that is on renal dialysis, and I certainly compliment the member opposite for the work that he's done on this file, and also the citizens in the Windsor area who want to see a site there, and it is certainly one that can receive consideration, and I thank the member for bringing it forward.
The Honourable Member for Truro Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My first question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, there are 3,900 farms in Nova Scotia, and over the last 4 years, our NDP government has supported farmers and young farmers staying in Nova Scotia and moving to Nova Scotia. Therefore, Nova Scotia is the only province in Canada to see its number of farms actually increase. We now have 236 farms that have grown in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister is, will he please tell the House his plans to ensure the growth of farms in Nova Scotia and that it continues to increase?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the member for the question. And it's a very important question. We must grow agriculture in Nova Scotia. The numbers have already indicated there is growth in Nova Scotia. We need to continue that. But we need to continue that on a very sustainable base, based on best business practices. And I can assure you we intend to do that.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member. It doesn't quite answer my question. There was no specific answer there about what he intends to do. And, Mr. Speaker, not everyone in Nova Scotia is fortunate enough to have immediate access to farm-fresh food, nor do they have the choice to shop at a local farm instead of at a chain store. I know, for instance, that the Federation of Agriculture is very keen to improve farmers' lives and livelihoods by supporting locally grown food. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, does the minister believe that access to farm fresh food is important for all Nova Scotians? And does he support an investment tax credit for our farmers as the Federation of Agriculture is requesting?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. Again, I've had those discussions with the Federation of Agriculture. It's a very important question, and it's one that we have to discuss both provincially and federally to ensure that could happen. It's one that I intend to pursue, but it will take some time.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I didn't really hear any specifics in that answer, so I'm definitely going to be very interested to see what the minister intends for the Department of Agriculture and for our farmers. Yesterday, we heard the Premier say that your government will only honour capital commitments, not program commitments, as he said before the election, which leads me to believe the very popular CSA program expansion will not go forward. So my final question, would the minister please explain how he will increase access to farm fresh foods while not expanding this popular community shared agricultural program and also cutting 1% of his department?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
We intend to maintain the very important programs that are in place to support the growth of farming in Nova Scotia and also to make the farms more viable. There's a serious business case, and we've had discussions already with the Federation of Agriculture around training farmers to be more efficient, more businesslike in their operations, and that's very important. And as we move forward, the member will see that we've got a very aggressive agenda for the farming industry in the province. We hope to grow that industry. We hope to grow it on a solid base and a base that will ensure that the industry survives and grows and we can get more local product into Nova Scotia instead of being imported from outside the province.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. In my former life, this has been an issue that has plagued me for a very long time. Seniors in Nova Scotia really have been left behind by the previous government. And despite recent calls by the Progressive Conservative Caucus to respond to the growing wait list for these long care facilities, nothing was really done. Now, while in opposition, Liberals remain silent on the issue, but we have recently learned that they plan to come up with a new continuing care strategy. So my question to you, Minister, is this. Will the Minister abandon the unfinished plans laid out in the original continuing care strategy? Will he fulfill promises made to facilities across this province?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness and Seniors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for a very, very important question. And I know that over the last weeks and months, this issue has been profiled in the media. But more importantly, families in Nova Scotia are asking that we do have
very definite plans and changes to improve access to care for their loved ones. There are, members in our community that a nursing home, in fact, can be the best place of care. Our program will put a lot of emphasis on doing more in the home, and we're talking about help and supports in the home, not just, hoping people will stay there. That being said, the current plan of replacement is in fact moving towards going before cabinet. We know that there are a number of beds, basically 759, that need replacement across the province, and a number of aging facilities need that upgrade. And most of those now have been reviewed, and in fact, some have even started with preliminary plans. So we do plan indeed to continuing the continuing care strategy with some update and refocus.
The Honourable Member for Colchester Musquodoboit Valley on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the first part of the issue the Minister addressed, there's another part to this issue as well, and that is that these folks are left to the responsibility of family members, and this puts a tremendous strain on families, and often it leads to ill health and, I know, financial hardship for a lot of the households. So my question is, will the government review the continuing care sector? Will this include addressing the needs of the caregivers?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness and Seniors.
Thank you very much, and indeed a question very relevant to this entire issue. We know that, in fact, the demand for respite in order to provide families who give a large amount of care to their parents also need an opportunity to be able to have rest and recovery. During the past year, and the previous government put an additional $22 million into the home care program, so we can get some sense of the growing demands that it requires. And the more we research, the more we hear that people want to stay in their own home, and we need to put those kind of supports and helps in place so that the caregiver doesn't get burnout and gets the kind of relief to continue what, in fact, is high-quality care in their own home.
The Honourable Member for Colchester Musquodoboit Valley on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is a third part to the problem. I know when I was in palliative care at the hospital in Truro, many people were on a wait list for long-term care. And though many seniors wish to remain in their own homes, there are instances where it's just not possible. Now, without the proper resources and the long waits, seniors are often too frail to return home and once they're seen by the doctor. So the Premier has said that he does not plan to honour the promise for new long-term beds. So the Liberals have also not indicated whether they will live up to the remaining commitments under the original continuing care strategy. So my question is, how does the Minister expect to address the growing wait list without recognising the needs of those who can no longer live at home?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness and Seniors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know the current number is at slightly over 2,500, hoping to get into a nursing home. As I've said previously, there is a range of frailty that our seniors are experiencing, and some need to be in a nursing home today. Others may be, in fact, with the kind of help and support to the home, can remain there longer. Over the course of our government in office, we will address those communities that are in need for nursing home replacement beds, and we will continue to take a look at some geographic areas that, in fact, have no nursing home beds at the moment. It is a major concern in our province that we, in fact, do first update those nursing homes that need to be replaced.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Natural Resources. The forest industry in Nova Scotia is one of the oldest industries we've had. We have seen major changes by the previous government which have negatively impacted on that industry. When the minister was in opposition, he advocated for the Bowater lands to be used for timber harvesting. So my question to the minister is, after 56 days in government, what has been done to ensure timber harvesting of this land will continue as it has for years and years?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the member for that question. In opposition and in government, we remain committed to ensuring that the previous western lands that were owned by Bowater or are used to their greatest effectiveness in terms of socioeconomic benefit for the people of Nova Scotia, and a big part of that is going to be for the forestry industry.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg, on his final or his second supplementary, first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister for that answer. The Bowater Mercy lands were independently valued at $120 million. The economic benefit of this land, the timber exports, and the value-added products manufactured by these lands increased that value greatly. There were over 300 jobs lost when you consider the loss of timber into the economy that trickles down to many, many more that have been negatively affected. So my question to the minister is this: when will the lands be opened up for harvesting so the economy can start to rebuild?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, through you to the member for the question. I'm very very sympathetic to the challenges that the forestry industry has been facing. Part of that has been that those western lands have been tied up. One of the first orders of business for me is when I came in as minister is to encourage the management development process to be expedited within the department, and our hope is to have that process finalized in the new year and have people cutting wood on those lands early in the new year.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg, on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm glad to hear the Minister say that we're going to have some turnaround quickly, because in an article published by the Chronicle Herald on February 28, 2012, which I will table, it quoted the Minister as saying, "We have a government that sometimes is very dismissive of the concerns of small business and the employers in this province." So I guess the question I have is your commitment, will you speed it up? Because people need to have the work now, not later.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, it's very nice to stand in this House, especially during question period, and agree with the critic opposite. The stakeholders that I have been meeting with primarily have been from the forestry industry. They have made it very clear the challenges that sector faces. They are serious challenges that our department is committed to is addressing to the best of our ability. I came in as minister at the tail end of this management process that was being done. I requested that our staff expedite that process to have the lands open up for harvesting as quickly as possible. Right now, that date is looking like early New Year. That's the quickest we can do it. And according to a lot of the stakeholders that we've met with, that will be fine and will suffice the needs that they have in terms of supply.
The Honourable Member for Sydney, Whitney Pier.
My question is for the Leader of the Official Opposition. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. No, honestly, my question is for the Minister of Justice, Mr. Speaker. Last week, the Halifax Council meeting, Police Chief John Michael Blaz reported to the HRM he had been in discussions with the government in hopes of changing bar closing times. He believes that reducing the times bars are open will reduce significant amount of crime, citing drunken late-night violence in downtown Halifax as siphoning off police resources. Will the minister provide the House with more details on the status of those discussions?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I, too, am a resident of Halifax, and I'm extremely concerned about violence and crime in Halifax. I think the Honourable Member knows, though, that issues that are discussed between police and council are not issues that I can get involved in as Minister of Justice or Attorney General.
The Honourable Member for Sydney, Whitney Pier, in his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Halifax Chief has reported. What steps has the government taken to assess the impact of cabaret licenses on early morning drunkenness and evidence of violence in downtown Halifax?
Okay. Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to orders of the day. I recognize the House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Can you call private members' public bills for second reading?
Private members' bills for second reading. Bill number 6. Number 8.
Thank you very much. Can you call Bill number 8, Nova Scotia Jobs Fund Transfer Act?